I'm Jay from Gallifrey Public Radio, a Doctor Who podcast and part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other incredible geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, a show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. I'm Chris, and today we've got Mark Diaz from Mark's Movie Collection. Mark, how are you today?
Doing well, Chris. How are you?
I'm pretty good, and I'm really excited for this because I hadn't seen Time Cop in a really long time, so essentially, for all real purposes, I saw it for the first time today, just rewatching it, and I'd forgotten how timely this movie can be.
Yeah, definitely. I had never seen it. This was actually my first time watching it. So it was definitely a wild ride in many respects.
Time Cop. It's your general, you know, 90s Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. Nice action-y, kicking people in the face. Tons of references to what they think are going to be the future. This movie was made in 1994. But it kind of shows you a future that they were talking about in 2004, which is a whole lot more futuristic than even now.
Yeah, I kind of missed that optimism. Back to the Future was another one. Back to the Future 2 specifically. Like, they were so optimistic. It's amusing in a cynical way to see how we looked at the future in the past from that future. And we're being like, nah, it's not that good. But we have Facebook, and that's different, but it's probably worse.
I mean, the thing that I always find really interesting with those is the tech that technically kind of works the same, but looks so different. Like, the self-driving cars they have look like you're getting into a Lego car, and then it just somehow works. But the ones we have now, I mean, it just looks like a car.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things, like, industrial design and stuff like that is actually super duper interesting. And the movie might have even suffered, or probably suffered a bit, from the "that doesn't look futuristic enough" syndrome, where they really had to go out of their way to be like, this is the future.
And it's always just funny, I think, when they do that, especially in like a 10-year time period, because if you look back to like 94 to 1984, you can tell there's not really that big of a jump in anything in 10 years, but somehow if you're making a movie about the future, everything just has to look so much more futuristic.
Oh, definitely. And Demolition Man was another movie that kind of popped into my head as I was watching Time Cop, you know, because their take was maybe a little more humorous. They had the three seashells and Taco Bell. Time Cop was like, let's play this really, really straight.
The one thing I think they really hammered down, though, was politicians going after money and doing whatever they need to do because money is the thing that is making the world go.
Yeah, they got that one scary right.
I mean, my wife was watching this one with me today, and that was the first, well, the second thing she noticed, because the first thing was all the weird future tech stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I like I said, I wish I could put myself in that position, because obviously I remember 1994, but my concerns were never of the future. I didn't wonder, what's the next thing going to be like?
Well, in 94, I was 8, so I barely remember it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most shocking thing for me in the beginning of the movie was that Mia Sara from Ferris Bueller's Day Off was in another movie. I was like, whoa, I've never seen her in an actual other movie before. Oh, another thing that was really interesting was the 300ZX product placement in the mall. I don't know if you noticed that.
I missed that one.
So when they're walking in the mall in the beginning, They walk past the 300ZX display, a Nissan 300ZX, which was like, so I guess to put that into a little more context, in Japan, they were having kind of like a horsepower war with every major manufacturer coming out with like their quote unquote supercar. And for Nissan, it was the 300ZX, which was like the highest tech, like most expensive thing. It was probably like an equivalent of like 60, 70 grand. Right, because it had all-wheel steering and electronically adjustable suspension, twin turbo, all that stuff. So they stop, Jean-Claude Van Damme and Mia Sara stop like right in front of a 300ZX display and like have a conversation while this nice, gleaming, new, futuristic-looking 300ZX is like right behind them.
Oh, that's so cool. I don't know how I missed that. I must have not played enough Gran Turismo growing up.
I played a lot of Gran Turismo growing up.
The other thing I really loved about this movie, though, is I really love time travel stuff. So just the fact that they went in, acknowledged that they couldn't go to the future, acknowledged that they couldn't try to run into themselves and change anything that way, and just the weird part of if you do go to the same time, you know, don't come in contact with yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, time travel stuff, how they handle all those things, I think is always really interesting.
So this movie was definitely fun in that respect because they give you the past as a huge playground where your setting can be kind of anywhere because of how they structured that. And the stakes obviously are that the repercussions could be dire, and their whole goal is the Time Enforcement Agency. What was it? TEC, right?
Yeah.
Their whole object is to minimize that, and they're kind of monitoring it, which also felt a lot like the Journeyman Project, if you ever played that on PC. And we get a lot of possibilities in the movie. I don't know that the movie fully delivers, but there's a couple sequences that are pretty fun, like when he goes back to New York right before Black Friday. Or is it Black Monday? When the stock market crashed? I forget.
One of those two.
Yeah. Like, that was fun because, you know, they did it, period, and it was cute. But, I mean, the rest of the movie I wasn't in love with, pretty much. And there's a lot of maybe unusual things. Like, when they travel through time, they get in this crazy-looking, like, rocket sled that disappears with them. But they don't reappear with it.
Yeah, I was really wondering about that part.
What happens to it? Does it eject them in the time stream where they're supposed to go? And then is there a bunch of those like sleds just sitting at the end of time? Or the beginning, as it would be?
And how do they get into the same sled when they come back?
I don't know that they do. I think they just press a button and like zap out of there, right?
Well, there was two different ways to do it. There was like your little personal remote control looking one, but they could also come back on the sled.
Okay, I didn't realize they could come back on the sled. Does JCVD do that at one point?
Yeah, when he comes back from the big thing at the end of the movie. Well, actually, both times when he comes back from the big past thing, he comes back in the sled, and it's almost like that weird, like Japanese game show looking piece in the middle of the track.
Yeah.
That the sled has to go through.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the halfway point it looked like. And the sled just appears afterward and hopefully slows down enough so they don't crash into the wall.
I don't know. I think that was a mistake. And they're just like, well, we're out of budget.
Oh, I mean, that's definitely had to be it. Because this is a 90s action movie. I can't imagine the budget was too big.
I know. And I mean, after paying for the muscles from Brussels, you know, he does, what, three splits in this movie? He probably charges per split.
I mean, I'm pretty sure it was two of them in the first 15 minutes, too. Something really.
Yes, it
like
was.
That.
It was like two in the first 15 minutes, like the bathroom scene or whatever. He does a split twice.
The next thing my wife brought up, though, was, isn't this just Legends of Tomorrow?
Kind of, yeah. But they go to the future in Legends of Tomorrow.
It just seems like it had a whole lot of those same elements to me, which is fine because I love it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, no one, it's not winning awards. Like, everybody knew this up front.
You go in, you bring your girlfriend or your wife with you because it has Jean-Claude Van Damme in it, and you get to see it because it's a cool action movie in the 90s.
Yeah, he does a wall flip. I mean, I'll watch anybody do a wall flip once. The villain, the actor's name is Ron Silver. I can't quite come up with his character's name, but he was like a Kmart Al Pacino, right?
Yeah, his name, he was Senator McComb in the movie, and...
Yeah, McComb.
Yeah, Aaron McComb.
So, yeah, the actor's name is Ron Silver, and I was just like, they couldn't afford Pacino.
No, I mean, as cool as that would have been, I do think this guy pulled, Ron Silver pulled it off well.
No, yeah, for sure. He knew the movie that he was in, and he nailed it. It's just the resemblance was so uncanny to me. I was just like, this guy looks so much like Pacino throughout half of the movie.
Now, this had Bruce McGill in it, who... has been in things all over the place. Nothing that I've seen for a while, but it's a face that I recognize.
Yeah, absolutely. I was like, I've seen a lot of these people before. I can't think of what, but I've definitely seen them.
I think the worst one like that for me was Scott Bellis that played Ricky. I had way too long thinking it might have been Matthew Lillard.
Oh my God. Yes. Wow, I had the same thought, and I was just like, nah, that's not even worth, like, commenting on. It's so funny.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one.
Yeah. Oh, and I just remembered now, actually, the highlight of the 300ZX display is when he does that kick to stop that shoplifter. I don't know if you remember, like, right in the beginning of the movie, there's a shoplifter, and he does that, like, you know, super cool Jean-Claude Van Damme sidekick. That happens, like, right in front of the 300ZX, so it is just prime. I think it's like probably between his legs, because that's where we're all looking at that point, right?
Oh, I know, right? And the double product placement, because you get the Wolverine boots right there in the screen.
Yeah, I know. I mean, this movie was hard 90s cool. Like, I think somebody had a mini disc player at one point.
Is that what that was?
That's what I thought it was. I was looking at it really hard. Like, what is that thing?
I've never actually seen a mini disc player. So I didn't know if that's what it was or if somebody was just imagining what CDs would look like in the future.
I mean, it was pretty small, and that's what I thought mini disc players looked like. So I actually don't know when the development on mini discs started. But I know that CDs were out from the 80s before the portable CD player became commonplace. So I imagine that that was like a mini disc product placement of some type.
The other thing I thought was weird when they went back to 1929, so Jean-Claude Van Damme's character could stop somebody from going back in time, was just the fact that he brought the mini-disc player is weird in itself. But he's sitting there bringing a newspaper with a list of stocks to look at, bringing all this stuff from the future. It's like, if you're going to go back in time, why can't you get somebody who can just go back? Tell them, these are the stocks that you buy. Why does he have to go back and do research in the past?
Also, they have, like, computers. So when Jean-Claude Van Damme's character, Walker, needs to search, like, the hospital databases and he connects it up to the payphone, like it's AOL, he has, like, the super cool, like, Palm Pilot handspring kind of device. Like, why not just use one of those?
This movie is so plot hole heavy, so inconsistent with things like that. But they're not big enough to have really hit me while I was watching the movie. Which is fine.
I mean, that was definitely like an after the fact, because I didn't even know that they really had those until he's like, well, let me look through all the hospital databases. Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop. You know?
I mean, I was sitting there asking my wife, how does he know which hospital bed to go to? When he just told the nurse he was with the cops. Oh, yeah, he looked it up on his little thing.
Yeah, and I mean, the costuming also was pretty interesting. Like, all of the future-type henchmen looked like if they were from a movie that was a mix of Hackers and Secret of the Ooze, that their actual idol was MC Hammer.
That sums it up pretty perfectly, actually.
Like, when you see the mall thugs in the beginning, which actually was a cute setup, to pay off later, where they're there in one frame and then he looks back and they disappear. But they're dressed like, what if MC Hammer was in the Darkest Timeline?
I think it was sometime in the next couple days, I'm going to go back and watch this movie again so I can see how many of those things actually showed up earlier in the movie. My favorite part is how Jean-Claude Van Damme's wife was going through the mall, and then future Jean-Claude Van Damme catches her and starts talking to her. And you see these scenes that you've already seen from a slightly different angle. And that's one thing I always like to go back and watch and see, you know, how many of these little hints can you technically see the first time you're watching the movie, but you'll never notice because you have no idea that you should be looking for that kind of thing.
So I wanted to do that. However, so I got the movie on Google, and for some reason it's stuttering in my browser, so I had to watch it on my phone, and that was a little annoying. But after watching the movie, I was like, I'm also not confident that they planted enough of those for me to be satisfied, and I don't want to be disappointed.
I rented it on Amazon, so I've really got the rest of my 48 hours to figure out if I'm going to do it or not.
I mean, if you do, just go ahead and put it in the show notes. I'm genuinely curious. I just didn't want to spend that time and, like, just be sad.
But the reason why we're talking about this game here and the movie is because it is a comic that exists. Once again, it's one that I was not able to really get my hands on.
Right. So there's a comic adaptation of the movie, which has relatively the artwork for the game, the box art, which looks nothing like Jean-Claude Van Damme because it was probably shown to a box artist who didn't even know that this was going to be a movie, because the way that box art is made, or at least was very interesting. They'd give it to some illustrator and be like, you know, notably the Mega Man ones, be like, this is a spaceman with a gun for a hand and he's metal. And then that's how you get the crazy Mega Man box art that makes zero sense. So they probably gave him some reference material for that. And that's why we have the box art that we have, which is maybe a little closer to like 90s X-Men than the movie uniform. But Time Cop actually debuted in August, September, and October of 1992 in the anthology Dark Horse Comics by Dark Horse Comics. I have it here. Mark Verheiden was a writer, Phil Hester, penciler, Chris Warner, inker, Clem Robbins, letterer, and Rachel Menashe, colorist. And it's basically Mega Man-esque how different Walker is in these comics versus Time Cop the movie. Like, Time Cop the movie is really trying hard to make him JCVD cool. He's definitely a bit dorkier, a bit more 1992, if you will. And then the plot has, like, almost zero to do with it. So, to summarize it, because it's actually pretty hard to find. I've not yet found part two. I just have part one and three, but it's pretty straightforward. Somebody goes back in time to the point where a giant diamond was discovered in a diamond mine in South Africa. And Walker goes back to stop him. But he has this, like, he has a mix between Ed 209 and an alien xenomorph as a personal defense robot. And like some drama happens there where he has to fight the robot after, you know, dropping the mine on the criminal, and he punches the robot to death and then vamps back to the future, and the future's all like broken and weird, and they're like, Walker, what happened? You got to get back out there. And he doesn't know what's going on because the future's all different. And it turned out that the robot stayed alive, as robots live, as they do. And he then has to go back again and fight the robot to a satisfying conclusion with the help of the, you know, locals, the miners and stuff like that. And he comes back to like a better future where he instead gives the diamond to one of the workers, and he's like, well, it breaks, and he gives all the baby diamonds to one of the workers, and he's like, you know, don't get crazy with it, like try to help people or whatever. Bounces back to the future and it's all nice and clean again. You know, but the animation style and the paneling and the pacing was very 90s comic. It wasn't, I don't think it was like blowing anybody's face off, honestly. I don't know why this one became a movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme attached versus any other comic.
That's a question I've been having with a lot of things lately. I know it's shocking. It just happened to be because Ed Annunziata saw the right thing at a comic show. I haven't been able to get a hold of anybody else that made some of these weird games. But I'm really curious about why this one got picked up. Because it doesn't seem like it's anything super remarkable. Like, you enjoy it while you're reading it, but... I mean, I wouldn't go around telling somebody that this kind of story is the best thing I've ever read.
No, not by a long shot. Nor is it the most innovative, nor is the art the most creative. It's definitely solid, right? Like, these people are people that make comics, for sure. But... And maybe looking at it with 2019 eyes, I don't know if it was a big deal in 1992. You know, I was like 6 or 7, right? It's just a vastly different scale. But we've been sitting in time travel movies forever. And we've seen movies of the ambition and complexity that would be unheard of in 1992. You could never watch Primer in 1992. Your eyeballs would just melt out of your face. Your brain would be the brain on drugs in that commercial.
Yeah, because now that you say that, I can't think of many time travel movies that would be older than that. I mean, Back to the Future, obviously. But nothing else really comes to mind to me.
Demolition Man, I think, came out in 92, even though it's not quite time travel. He's, like, from the past, right? So kind of a fish out of water. I feel like there was a movie where somebody like makes a science project and then their high school like goes into another like time dimension where there's like a go into a classroom and it's like the past. And I can't come up with the name of that movie to save me, but I vaguely recall there's a point where the kind of like jock stoner cast out guy is like racing this electrical pulse in his like supercharged whatever car. And I don't know. It's very fuzzy. It's a very young memory. But I felt like that one had maybe some time travel aspects. But it also might be cost and things like that. Back to the Future was not cheap. And it probably wasn't easy. That script was very, very tight.
I'm just glad we live in an era where we can get more time travel-y movies. We can get more of the what would have been a super expensive movie made just through things being more efficiently done now or being able to computer do things.
Oh, absolutely. I love it. I love the time that we live in with regards to movies.
I mean, there's no way we would have gotten these good Avengers movies 20 years ago.
Oh, no. No, not even close. Even even Iron Man was like, whoa, this is a big risk. But yeah, this movie was not the best. It was definitely a romp. You know, I do have some criticisms, and I hate to you know, downplay it because I'm sure everybody really worked hard on it, and making a movie is not easy, but there are definite flaws. You know, we talked about some of the continuity stuff, and I know that the editing and the fight scenes is very circumspect, and maybe the rumor is that Jean-Claude Van Damme was not much of a performer in that regards, and the editing of this movie kind of seems to reinforce that a little bit in my mind, because these fight scenes are also not the fight scenes that we're used to, but a lot of the fight scenes that we see that are really good also take months to rehearse and weeks to record, not even to edit and kind of fully produce, you know, with sound design and all that. So it's also one of those things where we might have been on a different scale with regards to time and preparation. And maybe that was kind of how Hollywood was at the time also, where this was seen more of like a popcorn flick, and it was given the appropriate amount of attention versus somebody having grown up on these kinds of movies being like, I'm going to make the best version of this movie I can make, you know, like a John Wick or a Raid Redemption or something like that.
And that goes along with why I'm looking at the games kind of chronologically too, because I mean, as we're going through these, your source material can't be newer than the game is anyway. So, you know, we're not sitting here trying to compare this to the Batman Begins trilogy or anything.
Thank God we are not.
Although in some ways I did enjoy Batman and Robin more.
I heard you on that, and I'm not going to call you out. I was also young, and I really enjoyed Batman Forever quite a bit, but I was checked out by Batman and Robin. I still watched it, you know, for reasons, right? You know, it's Batman and things. Definitely Batgirl at the time. That was a big one for me. But yeah, anyway, not to go into that too intensely, because I can rant about that on my own for a while, just in a room by myself. This game has maybe less attention than the movie did, in my opinion, and I don't know what you thought about it, but I would love to hear your thoughts.
Well, we'll get to hear all about that right after we drop some promos for a few other shows.
I was a fool to think that everything would change after I'd watched my stories each week. My soaps are over, and there's nothing left now. Nothing but the long, cold hours until they air again. I thought it would be a good thing to finally be rid of them, to have my life back. And yet, what a life. Such a lonely existence without them. Sitting in dark cafes, brooding over cold coffee, staring while the column of ash on my cigarette withers to oblivion. Waiting. Waiting. And then I found them. At last. The Soapy Madams podcast. They talk about British and American soap operas and soap opera tropes as well. It's a miracle. At last, I can fill 30 or 40 minutes of that cold, dark, silent time with the whimsical voices of the Soapy Madams. They have soap talk, guests, discussions of soaps from around the world, and games. Oh, so many games. You can find them on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or at soapymadams@podbean.com. Dare to dream. Dare to listen. Dare to soap yourself into a lather on the Soapy Madams podcast.
Usually when people mention the word history, they think kings, battles, and those dreaded dates. But what if I told you it was more than that? That history was one big story, full of smaller, even more amazing stories. A tale so compelling, it still lives and breathes in your DNA. Those of you who are even remotely interested in history will be thinking, well, yeah, of course, but I've heard the histories of Europe, America, Asia, and all sorts of other places in the world. What else is there on offer? Well, funny you should ask. Kia ora and g'day. My name is Thomas, and I host the History of Aotearoa New Zealand podcast. We are an island nation in the South Pacific, at the edge of the world, and the final major landmass to be touched by humans. We discuss the history of our islands, starting before people found these shores, heading through our story chronologically. We have talked about the arrival of tangata whenua, Māori, and how they survived in the weird, wonderful land time forgot, and have just started talking about how their society was made up. In future, we will discuss warfare, the haka, Captain James Cook, Māori and European coexistence and conflict, giving women the vote before anyone else, among other world firsts, and a whole host of other topics. So come and join us for the adventure wherever you find your podcasts or at historyaotearoa.com. Aotearoa spelt Aotearoa. Haere tu atu, hoki tu mai. Go well and return in good health.
Those are some great shows you should check out, but first let's finish up with this one. So this game, kind of like Batman and Robin, is a little weird in that it came out a year after the movie. And I don't remember looking at dates well enough lately to see if that's just something that happened more often than it does now. At least looking at it through 2019 eyes, that's just really weird to not have the movie and then the game like a few weeks later, if it even takes that long.
I mean, I think it's definitely bad marketing, but I don't know if you remember like movie release cycles back then, but at least in my mind, movies tended to stay in theaters a bit longer. Like, not everybody had HBO and stuff like that. And then movies would hit the like dollar theater or whatever. And I used to go see those a lot, like with my parents. So a movie could be not like in the home for a while before, you know, anything would come out relating to it, like home video wise, or I guess home entertainment wise. But it does seem like awful marketing. And I think that's about par for the course with the rest of the game as well. It could have easily been the case that this game was licensed for something else and it fell through. And then they're just like, well, time cop it up. Like, I think that's a distinct possibility.
That's not anything I've run across yet, although that's also the kind of thing that tends to not be front and center when you're looking at these two.
I think my more obvious image of that is Super Mario Brothers 2. And Doku Doku Panic, I believe, is what became Die Hard Trilogy or Die Hard Arcade. I forget which. But they were just like, there's a game that already exists. Like, let's put some of these known characters in here, license it up, and it's now your game. And it feels like a holdover from the weird, saturated game market of the early 80s. And, you know, we all know the story of the E.T. Atari cartridge and how awful and unfortunate that was. So it feels something along that path, but maybe better handled.
Yeah, Time Cop. It's your basic side-scrolling beat-em-up game from the 16-bit era. It's set a year after the movie, so they don't really try too hard to set up movie scenes in it. I'm not sure if they set up things from the comics. In the comics, did you happen to see if they could go into the future?
They do not go into the future in the comics. None of the characters that are shown in the game, as far as I've seen, are in the comics. He goes back to New York 1929 like he did in the movie. It doesn't feel like anyone with any care worked on that part of things. They don't go into the future in the comic. Like I said, it's a three-part thing, but it's an anthology. So, you know, those three parts roughly equal one book or something thereabouts.
Yeah, because I know in the movie they kind of made a big deal about how they couldn't go into the future. And then here in the game, they go into the future.
Yeah. Yeah, they do that. And what is it, Professor Kleindost? Is that his name?
That's as well as I'd be able to pronounce it.
Okay, he's the dumbest looking villain I've ever seen. Like, ever. Like, it is such a poor effort, I think, on people's parts to kind of sell this guy as a villain.
Yeah, he's like a washed up middle school science teacher trying to be an evil scientist.
I was thinking that he was like an antagonist for Beakman's World.
Ooh, I like that better.
You know, like evil Beakman.
This whole game, though, I'm trying to figure out why it exists. And I just don't know.
I don't either. It's like a platformer with like some bullet hell in there, because they're like, can't make it too easy. They give you no ammo when you're Walker. When you're the submarine, you have all the ammo you could ever want. Like, that's actually the only level that I'm like, let me play through this the whole way. And it was not all that frustrating. Even the controls are still awful as a submarine. That is the size of the entire screen. The digitized actors definitely don't age well. The animations take about 45 minutes to complete, including Walker has one animation where if you're moving right and then you turn left, he does like you know, that one step to cut back, and it takes forever. You're getting shot or hit by whatever you were trying to avoid at that point.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie, it looks good, especially for the era. But you're sacrificing looks there for an eternity of helplessness.
Yeah, like that was probably Jean-Claude Van Damme being animated, or if not, somebody who looked close enough to him. So that was cool. You're like, I'm playing the movie, but you're not, right? Every villain is just a copy-paste of the other, except for the outside kind of scene in New York where Kleindross is just, like, trying to drive by you. And there's some generic-ass robots and turrets and stuff like that, that, you know, because... And that squid, man. Those squids. Octopi. Octopodes? Octopuses? What's the plural for that?
We'll have to ask an animal expert.
Crikey. Oh, no, he's dead. I'm sorry. I love that guy.
I can never remember what the plural of octopus is supposed to be, so maybe we can get Paul Chomo to pop in and let us know.
Yeah. When in doubt, call Paul. But yeah, the controls are definitely frustrating in this movie. And so, I don't know, did you play a lot of the game? Did you kind of skip through it? Like, how did your experience go?
I skipped through it mostly. Watched a lot of playthrough videos on this one because I don't actually have a copy and my cat decided to chew through the Xbox cords. So I couldn't even use my backup version. We'll just leave it like that. So it was a lot more playthrough videos on this one than I usually do, but I definitely played enough of it to see that the controls are not responsive at all.
So for a while, I was getting kind of down on retro gaming. Like, I had still had all my stuff in boxes from when I moved however many years ago, and I was like, it's not even worth, like, pulling it out now, because I had come across a couple of games that people had mentioned I should play, and I went over and played them, and I'm like, hey, these things play like butt. But it just turns out that those games were bad, this being one of them. Because, you know, we still have games like Sonic and Super Mario World and Brothers that have really, really, really solid controls. But I don't know that that was a focus in making games back then. Not that it's easy to do that. It's not. It's difficult. But, you know, if I were in that position, that would be one of my top priorities, is making the controls feel good. But there is, on the shoulder button, an uppercut. And if you've never seen this animation of an uppercut, it's like a Mortal Kombat uppercut. And it takes probably about 3 seconds to come out, and it only hits what's right in front of you. So most of the enemies, if not all, actually have guns. So as soon as you press that uppercut button, they're pulling out a gun and they're shooting you. So even though it is a one-hit kill, you're never going to kill anything with it.
I mean, for me, the only thing I could consistently kill anybody with was that leg sweep.
Oh, so there was an entire level in New York, I think, where you're like in a bank or something, and I just went through the whole level, ducked, and just waiting for enemies to walk into the leg sweep.
I mean, what else are you going to do? Because your punch is really short, you're going to run out of ammo, your jump kick, you can't really aim for anything, which I think is weird, because that's like the ultimate overpowered move in these side-scrolling beat-em-ups.
I mean, realistically, there's some levels where you can't even jump. There's like flying robots, or there's like a street sign or things like that that are just environmental hazards to be tedious, even, because they don't make sense.
The street sign being the one that really confused my wife the most, because it's a street sign. It doesn't even look like it's something you should be able to touch in the game.
Yeah, it's like on a completely different plane and it's just hitting you and you're just like, what is hitting me?
And then at the end, when you beat Dr. Kleindost, he just kind of squishes in himself and goes away.
That was the dumbest, least satisfying conclusion to a game maybe I have come across. And I've played some bad games.
I mean, think of all the games where all you get at the end is a text screen saying you win. And this somehow finds a way to be worse than that.
Yep. Literally that. Another thing that I thought was really, really funny is at the end of the level, you get some bonuses, right? Like, oh, what's your score? Blah, blah, blah. And then there's like a time bonus. And I'm like, did they put that in there because they thought it was really clever?
I wasn't even paying attention to that at the end.
Yeah, there's a time bonus.
I'm so used to playing Sonic, though, where it's just, okay, that's when I get something to drink real quick and just kind of let the thing do its score doohickeys.
Well, I mean, I noticed it because I was personally offended by it. Like, what if there was an option, like, can I get this time back? And then you can travel back into the past and not play the game, or not play that level at least.
Oh, that would be really nice.
Yeah, like, that'd be cool. That'd be definitely a better use of whatever technology went into this. The Super Nintendo, not known for time travel, but, you know, with the FX3 chip, you can do it.
So I don't recognize any of the names as far as designers or artists or anything on this game. I don't always, but it's something that's kind of starting to get picked up on.
Yeah, this one under the radar.
I know, I can't think of anything else that Cryo Interactive has done just off the top of my head. JVC, I'm still thinking of as a stereo company.
I mean, JVC was kind of in a lot of places. Like, I have a JVC XI, and I'm like, what are you even doing here?
Making the most awesome Sega console ever.
I mean, I guess. So I looked up Cryo really quick, and Cryo actually made Dune. So that was pretty cool. I wonder if they made Dune 2. Dune 2, known to be relatively considered the first real-time strategy game.
I'll have to check that out. Thankfully, though, it's looking like that's going to be the only thing I have to worry about them for this show.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, overall, it's definitely been an experience, and I myself have traveled through time, but in my memories, to the past, and relived a hot section of the 90s right there. Not the best one, though. Not the best one.
No. There was a planned Sega CD version of this, but that got canceled.
Yeah, I had found the download for that, but it's been a crazy few weeks since we set this up, and work has been like on turbo, and I kind of forgot about it, and I remembered earlier today, but it was not in the cards for today either. I was just like, I need to just handle all this stuff so that I can go ahead and record with you now. So I didn't get a chance to see if I could download it or play it or what the case was.
No, I didn't even get a chance to look at videos for that one, but I can't imagine it would be much more than just a graphical upgrade on some stuff.
I mean, I genuinely don't know, because the trend with Sega CD games was it needs to be full motion. And it's like, does it though?
I mean, this one's real close anyway.
I mean, it's pretty digitized to the point where everything else is sacrificed.
Maybe it just left all the digitized characters and upgraded everything else.
I mean, if the controls were better, I'd reconsider, but the mechanics are still bad. Like, the punch, kick, sweep, uppercut thing is really bad. Also, on select, you have a bomb. So it's basically like, what if a platformer was a shmup? And I don't want that mix. That's not a thing that I desire. I don't know. I mean, maybe other people want that, but that's not my look generally.
Well, plus the part where you'd have to make it playable on the 3-button controller, and I don't even want to think about that.
Did they have not the 6-button controller for the CD, or?
Well, it just used the regular Genesis controllers, so whichever one you had.
Oh, yeah, that's no wonder a lot of Genesis games play really, really bad, because they need to be playable with 3 buttons.
That's why I was on a hunt for 6-button controllers so long, because I refused to play Street Fighter on there with a 3-button controller.
Oh, no, I wouldn't even. I'm fortunate enough that I actually have a couple of 6-button controllers. So, like, I didn't really give it too much thought, but in general, I don't like the Genesis as much as the Super Nintendo, but I've had the Super Nintendo since around 1992, so I grew up with it, essentially.
Yeah, I grew up with the Genesis, so it's got a little soft spot in my heart there, but I always wanted a Super Nintendo. And now I do.
Yeah, but basically the other side of the same coin for me.
So with this game, what do you think it really gets wrong in a nutshell compared to both the movie and the comic?
In a nutshell, that's actually an interesting and tough question. So I think I'll start from the end and kind of reverse engineer my way into it. So I'll say that the comic is, so he punches a robot in the comic, so that's actually correct in the game. He punches a robot in the game too. There's a boss that's like a little jumpy robot. That's roughly the same robot from the comic. And that's actually right. He goes to the future in the game, which is wrong, although I'm sure there was some expository text that I chose to ignore about Kleindost and blah, blah, blah. There's also submarines in the game, which aren't a thing, and you're in a dive suit in one level in the game, which is not a thing. I think that if they didn't license it as a movie adaptation of the game, and maybe that's why it came out a year later, I think it was a game looking for a license, and that's why that fit is so poor, even though certain aspects are very accurate, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense to me, because the things that fit it, the movie, I feel like are so generic that it's almost accidental that it fits so well.
Yeah, definitely.
And then are there any other things the game really gets right?
Man, I don't think so. Like, I was really, and again, this is with 2019 eyes, and I've dabbled in game development for a bit now. I understand how much work it takes, and therefore I have not pursued it further. I'm not saying that I'm the best game developer or anything. I'm not. But I've looked into it, and I've done research for a few years now. And it feels poorly executed, and it feels not thematically cohesive in any way. And just the bare bones mechanics are unpleasant for a player to interact with. So I just, no, I mean, like, the game is just not, it's not a good game.
Jean-Claude Van Damme is a human. That's about as much as I'm willing to give it.
Yeah. And I'm sure he has a badass leg sweep in real life.
Well, yeah, with those splits, why wouldn't he? Could probably get two people at once. And I probably don't need to ask this, but if you knew somebody who wanted to get into the comic or get into the movie, would you give them this game as a little bit of a primer course?
No. I would give them this game to hopefully get them to avoid the whole thing, maybe, if I were to give them this game at all. Although I think that the movie is definitely has more redeeming qualities than the game does. I wasn't like a huge fan of it, but it is definitely indicative of the times. It is definitely a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. He does three splits. There is prominent product placement, and they do probably blow their special effects budget on the couple of time travel scenes and stuff like that. But yeah, no. I would never give this game to anyone for any real reason other than to maybe archaeologically unearth the history of games that have been released.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of that I would ever use to subject somebody to this game would be if they wanted to do speed runs of a horrible game.
So I know a couple of people who are kind of into speed running, but they usually speed run good games. So I don't know. Are there people that are capable of focusing this much on this bad of a game?
I saw rumors that it was a thing. I know that there are people that go out and speedrun bad games in general. I did not see anybody specifically doing this one, but it would not surprise me at all if there is.
Okay, now I've discovered a new part of the internet.
So Mark, if people like hearing from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
So like you said in the beginning up top, I have Mark's Movie Collection, where I talk about movies. I talk about generally movies that I like. You know, like I said, I don't like slamming anybody's stuff, but I really do like boosting all the good things about things, if that makes sense. You can find me on Twitter at CoolMarkD, cool with a C, and Mark with a K. And, you know, again, talk about movies. I talk about tech stuff, IT, gaming. I use that Twitter as just kind of like a representation of me. I don't have any kind of marketing specific type stuff. So if you want to reach out to me for just about anything, that's a great place to do it. And you can find Mark's Movie Collection on Apple Podcasts, Google, TuneIn, Stitcher. What's the Podbean? I was like, what's the one with the P? Podbean? And also on scumbags.com, that is S-C-U-M-M bags, because of, you know, the Scum VM engine, or the Scum engine, I should say, which is a script creation utility for Maniac Mansion. And that's kind of, you know, what got me into this whole internet, like, gaming media space thing that I didn't end up fully going into, but I already had the domain. So that's where all my podcasts are. I have some other ones that I was, like, testing out, and I've kind of settled on the movie one for now.
And we'll definitely have links to all that in the show notes, because clicking links is easier than remembering how to spell things.
Absolutely.
And as always, if you want to find me around the internet more, you can head on over to Twitter at Play Comics Cast. Look for the Facebook group, Play Comics Podcast Fan Group. Don't forget that we have a merch store and a Patreon set up if you want to support the show. Also go there to support where Kaylee and I talk about Scooby-Doo and why we love it so much and why it is so important to pop culture history over at MeddlingKidsPod.com. Don't forget that Play Comics is now part of the Gunna Geek Network, where you can see such wonderful shows as the Starling Tribune, where they look at CW's Arrow show primarily, but you know, every once in a while kind of slip into one of the other shows too, because they're all connected, so why not? If you like the music that we're rudely talking on top of right now, check out Best Day's music over at soundcloud.com/best-day. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character. And don't forget that Play Comics is now part of the Gunna Geek Network, featuring such wonderful shows as Page Hurry Up and Load So I Can See the List.
That's a cool show.
That is the best show on the network.